Session number 10247, Reel 2.
Mr. Pomeroy, Reel 2.
Well, my contacts with Filipino people were on quite a different level. Of course, there are different class groupings in the Philippines, and the ordinary peasants who live in the villages, which are called barrios in the Philippines, are not so well educated or well developed as those you find in the urban areas, in the towns or the cities. But in the towns and the cities, Filipinos were a highly developed society. The Filipinos I came in contact with, whom I admired the most, of course, were those who were in the left movements and in the communist-led guerrilla movements, whom I eventually met on the island of Luzon.
What did the attitude of the Filipinos seem to be towards the American army coming into the country? Did they regard them as liberators or not?
Well, the Philippines had been an American colony since the year 1898. So for nearly half a century, Filipinos had lived in colonial circumstances under American rule. But American colonialism in the Philippines sometimes has been called benevolent colonialism or benevolent imperialism, in the sense that there were certain liberal policies pursued by the American colonial administration, such as the development of a quite decent educational system, the development of a political system which was, I would say, patterned after the American political system, but produced a lot of very capable political leaders. And the Filipinos, the majority of Filipinos admired Americans and had been shaped to a colonial mentality of looking up to Americans. This is not to say that there wasn't a very strong sense of nationalism among a great many Filipinos, and there was a strong independence movement. In fact, the Philippines had been already granted independence prior to the outbreak of World War II, from 1935 onward. A promise of independence to occur by 1946 had already been made. So Filipinos were expecting independence prior to the war and even during the war. But what shaped the attitude of Filipinos toward the return of the American army was the behavior of the Japanese in the Philippines during the war, which was of a very brutal, domineering type. And Filipinos really suffered under the Japanese, not only because of the deprivation of normal food and everything else, but because of the Japanese occupation and the cutting away of the American market and of American commodities. Not only because of that, but because of the attitude of the Japanese toward Filipinos, which were race or master nation toward a subservient nation. And as a consequence, there was a great deal of guerrilla activity against the Japanese during the wartime. Not only communist-led, it was led by all kinds of people, including by American army officers who had been left in the Philippines for that purpose, to build guerrilla movements. So there was a very strong nationalist and independent spirit among Filipinos who were carrying out this kind of struggle. Nevertheless, when the Americans returned, the comparison between the type of experience under the Japanese and the type of experience under the Americans caused the Filipinos to welcome Americans as liberators. Invariably, everywhere, this occurred. Americans came in with an abundance of food and clothing, and they handed this stuff out to Filipinos freely, you know. And of course, Filipinos are very grateful for this kind of thing. And so in general, the American army was welcomed.
How did your comrades behave as liberators?
Well, speaking as an American, I would say that Americans in general, are, and especially Americans in an army situation, are arrogant types of people. Americans think very highly of what they possess, and very often have a feeling of superiority toward other peoples who don't have what they possess. And the attitude of Americans toward Filipinos was, it's a friendly one in the sense that American soldiers developed close relationships with Filipinos, were very glad to be with them and enjoy life relationships and social relations with them. But at the same time, there is an arrogant attitude, and a great many Americans look down upon Filipinos. I will put it, I'll make this kind of comparison. After the American army arrived in Japan following the war, most Americans were pleased to get to Japan because it was a much more highly developed country than a country like the Philippines. And there was more of a respect, there was a respect for Japanese economic and social development and what they had built in their cities. And the tendency was to compare it unfavorably with the kind of life in the Philippines. Unfortunately, that is the attitude of a lot of Americans.
How was it that you came into contact with left-wing Filipinos?
Well, as I said, even before arriving on the island of Luzon, I knew of the existence of a communist-led guerrilla movement. As it happened, when I arrived in Luzon, my unit was based in what is today known as the Clark Air Base in the Philippines. It's in the central Luzon province of Pampanga. Pampanga was one of the centers of the communist-led peasant movements long before the war. And it was these peasant movements on which the anti-Japanese guerrilla movement was based. And the anti-Japanese guerrilla movement was known as the Hukbalahap, which is a contraction of Filipino, the name of the guerrilla movement, which is Hukbo Nangbayan Laban Sa Apon. Means People's Anti-Japanese Army is the translation into English. But this name was contracted into Hukbalahap. Sometimes hook. The word hukbo in the Philippine language means army. So hook is a contraction of this word hukbo, meaning army. The movement in general became known as the hook movement because of that. But it was based, one of the main bases was in this province of Pampanga, where the army base I was and was located. And inevitably, you see, many Filipinos came into the American army camps and to do all kinds of labor and to wash the clothes of soldiers and to invite Americans to come to their towns and visit. And I met a lot of Filipinos from a town called Arayat, which is located in Pampanga province. It sits at the foot of the only mountain in the whole central Luzon plain. It's called Mount Arayat. It sticks out of the plain there. And Mount Arayat was one of the bases of the guerrilla movement. And I was invited by people from that town to come there and visit, and I went there to visit. And while I was visiting there, I met the members of the Hook, the guerrilla. I mean, I even had with me a lot of literature of not only of the American Communist Party, the Australian Communist Party, whom I had met when I was in Australia. They sent me their materials from Australia. And I had a lot of it. And this to the people I met in the town and gave it to them, and I told them my beliefs and political associations, and they accepted me, and I became very friendly with the Hook people and with the members of the Filipino Communist Party who were there, who led this movement.
What impression had you got of how effective they had been against the Japanese?
My impression was they were extremely effective. For one thing, all of the villages and the towns in that area were solidly in support of the Hook movement. The people all over the province were pro-Hook, in very high regard for the Hook movement. You know, the counterintelligence corps, I mean the American intelligence outfit, warned American soldiers not to travel freely around the area. The excuse given was that there were still Japanese stragglers around. Well, it's true there were some Japanese stragglers, but they were no real threat to anybody. Most of them were wanted to surrender. But the main reason why this warning was given was to prevent American troops from coming in contact with the communists and the communist-led groups. But I used to go around freely to this area. See, as a member of this historical writing team and so on, I had a pass which enabled me to travel freely. All the members of our unit had this. And I could go to many places where others could not. And even the members of, I tried to bring members of my unit to these various towns to meet these guerrilla forces. Most of them were, Americans were afraid. They were afraid of civilians with guns, that's what they were afraid of, you know. And they would come in contact with ordinary peasants with guns, and they were afraid of them. They thought they were bandits, you know, because they're, most Americans would view such people as unmilitary, untrustworthy elements who were bearing arms. But I could move freely among these people, and they gave me many opportunities to meet the commanders of the Hook movement. And I was very much impressed one time when I stayed overnight in one of the villages, and the Hooks had a what they call a cultural information department, which put on performances for the people in the villages and the barrios. And for an entire night one time, out in the open fields, they set up a stage and performed full-length plays and with musical presentations and poetry and songs. And this is all of a revolutionary type and of an anti-Japanese propaganda type, you know. But I was enormously impressed by that. The fields were filled with people who sat there throughout the entire night watching this performance, you know. And a movement capable of producing a thing like this, I thought was very impressive. But also while I was there, and this was in 1945, we were in Pampanga, I would say, from about January 45 until we moved up to Okinawa later on in 45. Throughout that time, I met a great many people, but precisely that time, the American Army began to crack down on the communist-led Hook movement and arrested almost all of the leaders of the movement and confined them in detention camps. And it produced big demonstrations in some of the towns in central Luzon against this. People just poured out demanding the release of their leaders. And I could see this going on, but also it indicated the attitude of the American commanders toward the Hook movement. They didn't accept it as a legitimate movement because it was led by communists and it had a political character which the Americans distrusted. Well, distrusted for a good reason, as events later showed. But the American Army's attitude was to attempt to disarm the Hook movement, which simply compelled the guerrillas to retreat into the forest or into the remote areas to prevent this. They held on to their arms. There were only two or three groups of the Hook forces, regiments of the Hook forces, who were attached to the American Army for combat purposes, extremely capable of fighting people who were highly commended by American commanders, but they had certain special capabilities in dealing with the Japanese in the jungles, you know, and in the forest. They had been experienced in doing this, and they did very good work in, with the American Army.
Did you come across those particular units?
I met some of the people in them, yes.
And so this crackdown occurred whilst you were in Luzon, did it?
Occurred while the war was going on. While the war was going on, almost as soon as the American Army arrived in Luzon. See, the Hukka movement existed in all of the provinces of central Luzon, the provinces of Pampanga, Nueva Ecija, Tarlac, Bulacan, parts of Bataan and Zambales, and also in southern Luzon, in the provinces of Laguna and Quezon. These areas were the areas of Hukka operations. And these were the areas that the American Army passed through when they invaded the island of Luzon. They invaded at the upper part of the island around what is known as Lingayen Gulf, and then they moved down across the central Luzon plain to enter the city of Manila, which was defended by the Japanese. And this whole area was liberated by the Hukka movement before the American Army arrived, so they had very easy passage across Luzon all the way to the city of Manila. But as soon as the American Army had managed to gain its objectives and entered Manila, they promptly began to disarm the Hooks wherever they could reach them. There was one notorious instance, the Hukka movement was divided into what units called squadrons, and an entire squadron had spearheaded the American drive to Manila and had entered Manila ahead of the American Army to clear the way. This entire squadron was disarmed by the American troops as soon as Americans arrived in Manila and told to return to their home in central Luzon. On their way back in the province of Bulacan, the right-wing guerrilla elements in that province, who were under landlord leadership, ambushed the disarmed squadron and captured them and massacred the entire squadron of about 112 members. This incident was a demonstration of the American Army attitude and what they would permit. And, of course, it was a warning to the Hukka movement, so precautions were taken by the movement at once, you know, and weapons were hidden. People who were known as Hukka leaders went into hiding. And this is while the war is going on. You see, here is a guerrilla movement, which is a long record of fighting the Japanese, and a very capable one, was treated in this fashion by the American Army. It was an advanced indication of the conditions that would exist in the Philippines when the war ended, after the war. Hmm.
To what extent do you think the Hooks were taken by surprise by the American crackdown?
I wouldn't say they were taken entirely by surprise, because, after all, the Hukka movement was led by a communist party which had long conducted movements for independence against American colonialism. The Philippine Communist Party was founded in 1930, and within a couple of months after it was founded and began its activity, it was outlawed by the American Army, I mean by the American colonial authorities, and all of its leaders were arrested and were sentenced to long prison terms and then forced into internal exile. They were forced to live in remote areas away from Manila and other urban centers where they had been active in trade unions previously. So throughout most of the 1930s, the Communist Party was underground, had been illegalized by the American colonial regime. So the movement had this experience, you see, under American rule. So the leaders of the movement knew quite well that this is the sort of thing that you could expect after the Americans returned. So there was a lot of caution on their part. But as I say, the general attitude of the Philippine population was to treat the American army as liberators and to welcome them. And this had an effect even in the areas under Hook influence. People were very happy about getting rid of the Japanese, and they welcomed the Americans. There was I attended meetings where the Hook leaders would caution the people in the villages, please do not go begging to the American army for food or clothing or for anything. You know, don't put yourself in a subservient position with the Americans, who after all were our colonial rulers in the past, you see. And warning people, please maintain your dignity and maintain your independent spirit. Don't subject yourself to the American army. It was the advice given by the Hook leaders to the people.
You describe the areas where the Hooks were strong. Why was it that they were strong in certain geographical localities and not in others?
They were strong there because in the pre-war years, the left-wing peasant unions that existed in these areas, the peasant unions were quite strong in the post-war period, and they were led by communists. So the Communist Party had rather deep roots in these areas even before the war.
But was there anything in either the social character or the geography of those particular areas that meant that the Communist Party was able to put down strong roots there rather than in areas where they were weak?
Well, yes, because the central Luzon areas in the Philippines are the main rice-growing areas, to some extent sugar, but mainly rice-growing. And the agrarian relations were very feudalistic. Landlordism was very abusive in these areas. The feudal relations were very onerous. And the crop-sharing system was heavily weighted in favor of the landlord. The peasant received only a tiny bit of a harvest, you see. And so the conditions in these areas, under feudal conditions, produced a very militant spirit among those who were organized against it. You see. Mm-hmm.
Now, can we pick up your own personal story?
Oh, wait, I'd like to mention something else before we go on. As I mentioned, there were other guerrilla movements in the Philippines throughout the country and almost all of the islands. Most of them were, they organized guerrilla groups, and many of them were living off the people without doing much fighting, and were simply waiting for the American army to return. In fact, the American army commander, General MacArthur, had issued an order to the guerrilla movements under American influence to wait for the Americans to return before launching attacks on the Japanese. So this attitude existed. But there were also a good many of them, guerrilla movements, which did conduct operations against the Japanese. Now, on the island of Luzon, there were any number of guerrilla movements. Some of them were led by American army officers who were left behind after the Japanese captured the Philippines. And they, of course, they were very anti-communist in their attitudes. And a lot of these guerrilla movements had the leadership of very conservative Philippine politicians before the war, or conservative political figures before the war. And they also had anti-communist attitudes. So although the line of the Philippine Party was one of developing a united front against the Japanese and tried to develop united front relations with all of these groups, many of them actually fought against the Hooks. I mean, There were many battles between the Hope movement and these very conservative-led and American-led guerrilla movements during the war, during the Japanese occupation, which prevented the Hope movement from expanding as it would have liked to have done. The Hope movement wanted to expand beyond these provinces, but everywhere they would go, they would encounter these hostile units, you see. In some areas, they were successful in developing good United Front relations, which even persisted until after the war. But these were not general, and there were most of the other guerrilla movements developed an anti-Hook attitude and refused to cooperate with them.
Did the anti-communist political forces amongst the Filipinos during the war generally oppose the Japanese or collaborate with them, would you say?
Well, of course, those who organized and participated in guerrilla movements opposed the Japanese. But Filipino political was very, very extensive. You see, prior to the war, there was already a transitional government established preparatory to the grant of independence, which was to take place in 1946. It was headed by Manuel Quezon. And the vice president was a man named Sergio Osmeña. And both of these people were evacuated from the Philippines by the Americans when the Japanese arrived and brought to the United States, where they existed as sort of a government in exile. But all of the other political leaders of the country under the Commonwealth government, maybe there were three or four who did not collaborate, but all of the others collaborated and participated in a government established by the Japanese. The Japanese established a puppet government in the Philippines, and all of these political leaders took part in it. It was extensive collaboration by this whole political elite, which had been built and developed during the American colonial regime. It was one of the most notorious cases during the war of collaboration with the enemy. After the war took place, attempts were made to try these people for their collaboration in special tribunals, but the cases never prospered.
What about the Muslim areas in the Philippines during the war? Which political forces were able to establish themselves amongst those?
To my knowledge, there was no guerrilla activity against the Japanese among the Muslims. I'm not very clear as to what actually took place in this part of the Philippines, but I don't know of any resistance to the Japanese by the Muslims. I suspect that the Japanese might even have developed, as they did elsewhere in Southeast Asia, special approaches to such people, because the Muslims in the Philippines had been always persecuted and discriminated against and denied opportunities. I suspect the Japanese might have taken advantage of this and made special appeals to the Muslims.
Now, can we pick up your personal story and how it developed from where we left off?
I was, I believe, telling about contacts with the Hooks in the Philippines. Well, I became extremely attached to these people, and